former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lombardi Line, this show presented, as always, by DraftKings. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. We got a couple potential divisional round classics on tap later on this weekend, so we'll make sure that we preview those games at length today. Also, the coaching carousel is spinning and in some places stopping, which has made your other host, Femi Abebefe, none too pleased, Michael. Mike McCarthy returning as the head man in Dallas.
I mean, Twitter Femi was out in full force.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the thing is look, and we said this on the show yesterday. I think we often mistake that people that are in their 80s, that they're in a rush to get somewhere. And probably there's some degree of truth to that, but they're also resistant to change. And I think what Jerry basically said to himself when he looked over the whole landscape of what was going on is, look, there's some things that Mike does really well. And we need to repair, not replace. And so, you know, when you look at it, and I said this to Femi today on the pod. I mean, John Harbaugh's won 160 games, 99. He's won one Super Bowl. Tomlin, 173 and 100. He's won one Super Bowl. Below 500 record in the playoffs. Sean Payton, exactly the same record pretty much as McCarthy. 160-98, 9-8 in the playoffs, one Super Bowl. Like, okay, so the question is, are you firing John Harbaugh if he has a bad game? Like, why is McCarthy subject to getting fired? Well, the reason is because the narrative about Mike has been really bad since he went there, right? Even though he's the winningest coach in Cowboy history, he's got a 62% winning percentage. And you say, well, like, there's a mistaken idea that this is the most talented team out there. They have some talented players, there's no question. But their offensive line, when they go on the road, has been problematic. Their defense, losing Diggs. They're not a great man-to-man team. We know that. With Gilmore's kind of down in the tooth. They're not a great zone team. Their linebacking play isn't great. They're starting Jonathan Hankin as a defensive tackle. He got cut by the Raiders. So, like, I don't know where this – they got some really good players. They have a quarterback who's top 10, not top 5. Like, why are they underachieving? Like, why is that? Because they're America's team? Like, why does Mike have to get fired after a game? Again, that was a horrible coaching performance. They really undervalued the Packers. But to me, this fire him, and if you believe that, then if Harbaugh, he should have been fired after the Tennessee playoff game at home last time, and he should be fired if he doesn't win this game.
So I think that where Femi and where a lot of Dallas Cowboys fans are coming from in this standpoint is because you do have this regular season success, and it feels like everything's coming up roses. You are the only team ever that has had three straight seasons of 12 wins and not to make at least a conference championship, and then it's compounded by the way you lose this game, because everything's set up for Dallas this year in the postseason, Michael, right? Like, the Eagles ultimately just fall apart. You win that game against the Lions when you probably shouldn't. You get set up to where you're facing a young quarterback who's making his first playoff start, and you no-show, and you look unprepared, and so much of that is because of coaching in that game. So I understand, like, the recency of it and the compounding frustration of being so good and feeling repeatedly like this is the year we're going to win a Super Bowl, and then you don't, and then you leave the postseason early again.
Right. And I don't disagree that game was horrible. But Dan Quinn has to take some of the heat for that game as well. I mean, Dan Quinn's defense was atrocious. And yet he's getting no blame. In fact, he's got four interviews out there.
Yeah. What do we have right now?
He's got four interviews.
So he's expected to interview today with the Commanders and Seahawks, the Chargers tomorrow, and he's already talked to the Titans and Panthers.
I mean, so, like, it's what I say all the time. There's only two people in the building get paid to win, the head coach and the GM. Everybody else can have bad years or good years. I mean, look, you know, Dan, they gave up 420 yards to Detroit when they played them. They gave up 415 to the Packers. Like, okay, the Seattle had 406 on them. Like, is that a great team? Like, I'm not trying to get Dan Quinn fired, but why is Dan Quinn not taking some of this?
Sure.
Why isn't he taking some of this heat? I think, to me, the expectations were out. Really, they weren't there. I mean, every time they played a good team, we would say, well, you know, this can't beat a good team. Well, they can't beat a good team because they have flaws within their team. They have flaws within their team. They're not as talented as we make them out to be. And that's the issue. To me, they're not as they have Lamb's a great player, right? Look, they missed Zeke Elliott all year. I mean, let's be clear. They could not run the football with power all year. They're 20th in yards per attempt, right? Mm-hmm. They're 15th in touchdowns scored on the ground. Everything they had to do was through the air. They were, you know, they were the eighth team in attempts in passing attempts for a team that played with the lead so much. You would think that number would be much lower, but it's not. They did a great job of protecting the football. Like there's some like McCarthy, you can argue is, you know, is not a good coach. It's really not fair to Mike, but you can make that argument. But there's some positives that came out of this. He's better than Kellen Moore. Nobody wants to admit that. They were better with him than Kellen Moore. Nobody wants to admit that. And so, like, look, he's got 1 year left on his deal. Why would Jerry at 83 years old want to go through a whole change, new offensive staff, new defensive staff, have to teach the quarterback new scheme, have to learn the people in the building? You know, like, maybe we need to do these three things better and we'll get better.
And
I think sometimes we just view the head coach and everybody just wants to fire the coach.
So I'm not surprised that Jerry Jones kept Mike McCarthy. I do want to make sure that I make that clear. I just understand the argument as to why so many Dallas fans are up in arms and are upset. And Jerry, you are dead on about the way that he must feel. Like, I think that this was probably an easy decision when push came to shove for him to stick with McCarthy. Dak Prescott has even come out and said that McCarthy is a big reason why he took a step this year. But Jerry Jones, in a statement, said that he believes this team is very close and capable of achieving their ultimate goals. He said the best step forward was with McCarthy as their head coach, said there's great benefit to continuing that progress under his leadership as their head coach. And he also talked about that loss on Sunday, saying that it's not just on him. Like, recognized everything you're talking about, Michael. He said, it's not just on McCarthy. It's our players, our coaches, our front office, myself. There's accountability for our results. I'm accountable for our results. The lens we use to view and evaluate Coach McCarthy is holistic. And so here's where I want to take this next, Michael. You said it just now, like, about Mike McCarthy as a coach. He's a good coach. He's not a great coach. Bill Belichick is a great coach. And we saw the report from Adam Schefter that said, to the best of his knowledge, he didn't think Jerry Jones reached out to other coaches and tested the waters. He said, quote, I think he was deciding on what to do with Mike McCarthy singularly, and he made the decision that his team was better off. If you are Jerry Jones and you truly believe that the Super Bowls are what matter and the postseason is what matters and this is what we need to do, how do you not call Bill Belichick? How do you not try to test the waters with these other coaches? So are you buying Schefter's report, or do you think he did make those calls behind the scenes?
No, I don't think he did. I think, to me, when he takes a step down that lane, he is going into an area of organizational structure that he doesn't want. Now, that's a whole other conversation, right? We can argue that since 94, the last Super Bowl, this is a 54% winning percentage team. And that's fair. But the structure that Jerry has since he left Jimmy Go hasn't changed. He wants to be the spokesman. The team runs through him. Steven and all everyone else kind of runs the front office, but he runs the team. The coach has a role within that framework. And as an owner, he's entitled to that. He's really entitled to that. But you bring someone like Bill Belichick in or Vrabel in, and now all of a sudden you are changing your corporate structure. Right. Will McClay is no longer going to have the biggest voice in personnel. It's going to be coaches and him. It's just something completely different to Jerry. And so since 94, right, we're talking 30 years of doing things one way. I don't think he wants to change that. I think that's why he hired McCarthy to begin with, because McCarthy in Green Bay never had to worry about personnel. McCarthy in Green Bay was just the head coach. Ted Thompson did all the personnel. They signed no Plan B free agents. Free agents, not Plan B. They rarely made a trade. They just did the draft, and he had a bunch of college free agents after the draft. That's it. And Mike was good with that. He was a good soldier. He worked within that framework. Whereas now Jerry goes out and hires Vrabel. He hires Belichick. He's going to change everything. He's going to change his way of life. And at 80, do you know many 83-year-olds that want to change their way of life?
Can't say that I do. And to that thought process, Michael, I said this to Femi earlier when we were crossing and he was leaving from GM Shuffle. I was like, with Jerry, like, let's say he did hire Bill Belichick, he brought him in, and they won the Super Bowl next year. That's Bill Belichick's Super Bowl. He's the one getting credit. And I think Jerry Jones wants credit. And he would get credit for keeping Mike McCarthy and being patient if they do get over the hump and turn things around. But they do need to turn things around. 1-3 in the playoffs for the Dallas Cowboys, a team and a franchise that has not been to an NFC championship game since the 90s, is unacceptable, right? Like, if you are that organization and you're Jerry Jones, that's the thought process you have to have. So now with Mike McCarthy, is it... I mean, if this is the last year of his deal, do you try to extend him, or is this a lame duck situation, or you just kind of play it out like he did with Jason Garrett?
I think you play it out. Like, it's not lame duck. I mean, if you're a great coach, you don't care about your contract. You think Mike Tomlin cares about his contract? He'd rather have it all wait and see what happens in the marketplace, right? If you're Mike McCarthy, you're not a lame duck. If you win, you know you're going to take care of it.
Yeah.
Guy's won three straight years, and we're talking about his job security. He's won 42 games in 3 years. I mean, you know, look, let's face it. The great Jason Garrett, you know, he lasted how many years there from 2010 to 19? He won 85 games. He's a 55% win percentage coach. Like, there was an argument to be made. Like, what did Garrett do, right? Like, there was a fairly good argument. This one, there isn't. Like, you remove McCarthy, and then who's going to coach the quarterback? Who's going to get him to play at the level above his talent grade?
Sure. No, I think what he did for Dak Prescott this year was great. But at some point, you do have to get the postseason success. And I hope for Mike McCarthy and for the Dallas Cowboys as a franchise, for their sake, that that happens next year. We're going to continue talking coaches when we come back. More to discuss with Nick Sirianni. Gerard Mayo was introduced. And your boy Bill took another interview with the Falcons. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out our new vsin.com. It's got a fresh new look, enhanced navigation, and a mobile-first focus. Time is money in sports betting, and the site's pages have been built to load quickly. We also have expanded our educational content and strategy sections for new and experienced bettors. Check us out, vsin.com. If you have any questions about the sunsetting of the vsin app, please go to vsin.com/FAQ. I know a lot of you miss the app, but like we said, we've got that enhanced mobile portion of it. So I think it still will be a really, really great experience, although it is a transition. I know. Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantonio with you. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Lombardi Line. And we're talking a lot about the coaching carousel and how yesterday we learned that it stopped in Dallas. Mike McCarthy will be retained as the head coach moving forward in 2024 for the Dallas Cowboys. And for the Philadelphia Eagles, who are in a very similar situation where you have this great start to the regular season, you think you're on this trajectory for a potential another NFC championship course. Things fell apart for this team, particularly bad down the stretch in that final game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So a lot of these questions have been raised about Nick Sirianni and his future. Michael, he reportedly completed exit interviews with players and is expected to meet with the team owner, Jeffrey Lurie, today to express a plan for the future. But I know you said on the podcast earlier today that Sirianni and Howie Roseman are conducting interviews for coordinators and assistants. So it appears he's staying put. What's your view?
Well, I think, you know, when Elliot talked about this, we had him, and he whispered in our ear that the last time this happened with Doug Peterson, Peterson didn't present a plan to him. And that plan wasn't acceptable, and he moved on from Peterson. And so I think Jeffrey Lurie wants to listen to what Nick says is wrong with the team. Because after the bye week, there were problems that never got corrected. And one of the main focuses of a job of the head coach, especially non-play caller head coach, is to figure out what's wrong with your team and fix those problems as you're moving forward, right? That's what the Chiefs have tried to do with their offense. That's what Buffalo's tried to do with the injuries. Those coaches have tried to do that, compensating for the players or the scheme faults within it. We never saw that from Philly. They actually got worse, mm-hmm. worse. The practicing wasn't good. Their conditioning was horrible. Their execution. I mean, Brian Johnston, the offensive coordinator, he interviewed for Atlanta today. You're going from him to Belichick in a day. That's going to be light years apart, right? Like, seriously, they couldn't handle a six-man pressure. They couldn't handle zero blitz. And there was no adjustment at the game. And so Nick's going to have to answer some hard questions from Lurie, because – and he's got to come with them with a plan to say, okay, here's how I'm going to fix the offense. I'm going to hire this guy. I'm going to hire that guy. I want to bring this in. Here's what we need to do defensively. Here's how I want to change it. And it's not selling yourself. It's being able to have the aptitude to have a plan to understand what needs to get fixed. See, McCarthy in Dallas, he's got to be able to sit there. And I'm sure they're probably saying, we hope Dan Quinn gets a job. Because then they could fix, then they could go back in and fix the defense. They don't want to lose Quinn. I'm not saying that. But it gives them a chance to kind of maybe bring Mike Zimmer in. They bring Mike Zimmer in, they fix the defense. They do a different style of defense, what might be more conducive to their personnel. So I think there's an answer there, right? You can find it. You have to present it to the owner. And if the owner sees it and likes it, then you're moving forward.
And I like that you referenced that precedent with Lurie and Doug Peterson a few years back, because that does tell you that, okay, the plan that Nick is going to present is very, very important, and it means a lot to the owner. It needs to be steps coming forward. And a plus, certainly, for Sirianni, a feather in his cap, is that it seems he has the player support. Take a listen to what Fletcher Cox had to say when asked about it.
What is it to talk about, man? This man, he's a winner. He's a winning head coach. You know, do we have some bumps this year? Yeah, but every team, every organization, everybody goes through it. But we don't look at firing a man who, you know, obviously has won 10-plus games 2 years in a row, that's took this organization to 3 playoff appearances 3 years in a row. You know, that's a respect.
And there was a follow-up question saying, what percentage of the issues do you think fall on the head coach? And Cox said that's a clown question. So they moved on from that, Michael. But I think that does mean a lot for a head coach to have player support and say, like, What are we talking about? We want him.
Right. But they're also, you know, the question is, Nick, like, your team was falling apart. Why didn't you fix it? Your team wasn't in shape. Why didn't you fix it? Your defense couldn't tackle. Why didn't you fix it? Did you know? And I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they had drills for tackling, but it sure as hell didn't look like it on the tape.
Yeah.
Maybe they did. You know, I mean, you know, they were old and slow on defense. They really were. Now, part of the problem is design too, right? The production of the team was horrible, but they were one of the slowest defenses in football. They really were. And they're old. They're an older team. This is going to take some time to revamp this. All the fans want all the older players to come back, but they're not the same players they once were, including Fletcher Cox. Once a great dominating player, not quite the same. So I think Nick's got a lot of answering to do from Jeffrey. And he's going to have to present a comprehensive plan. In that plan, he's going to have to show that he can. Now, do I think... You know, and when you're reading the news today that Belichick's going down there for a second interview, I have a feeling that if you're David Tepper, you're probably, maybe I might want to make, now, if you have any interest, you better make that call.
Yeah. Well, and I also think, too, just to tie in the last little snippet of this Philly conversation, I don't think that Bill Belichick is committing anywhere until he knows about this opening as well, right? Because, Philly could be a good spot too with the talent that they do have. And I know there are a lot of flaws, there are a lot of issues, like you mentioned, but a defensive mind like Bill Belichick would make a whole lot of sense to help improve that unit. Also, Michael, while we're on the topic, the successor to Bill Belichick was officially introduced in New England yesterday. And I liked a lot of the things that he had to say, talking about establishing a collaborative team culture. And he also talked about balancing being himself, not trying to be Bill Belichick, but also respecting the past, which is something we talked about yesterday. Here is Gerard Mayo.
Bill always says this, managing expectations. For me, I'm not trying to be Bill. I'm not trying to be Bill. I think that Bill is his own man. If you can't tell by now, I'm a little bit different even up here. But what I will say is, you know, the more I think about like the lessons that I've taken from Bill, hard work works, right? Hard work works, and that's what we're all about.
I know you watched and listened to the whole thing. How did he do in the press conference? What was your evaluation?
Well, I think he, you know, the first thing he did was the smart thing was, look, I'm not Bill. Nobody's Bill. I can't be who Bill is. I can't, you know, I'm not going to be able to be that guy. And so, you know, and he was his own man. He was forthcoming. He was out there. He looked very relaxed. I mean, the work ahead of him, the collaboration ahead of him, it's going to be interesting. Because he's got a lot to do, right? You're taking over for a guy who did a lot of things that I'm not sure even Mayo knows how much he did. You know, he's, you know, wrote reports on college players, handled a lot of stuff was going through his desk. And Mayo's not going to be able to handle all that. He's going to need to rely on Matt Groh, Elliot Wolf, Patrick Stewart, some of the guys in the personnel department to help and rebuild the team. It's going to have to be collaborative. There's no question about that.
And as far as the GM portion of it goes, Robert Kraft said he's exploring all options, wants to see what's in-house and in the marketplace. So going through that evaluation process, acknowledged it's been a quarter of a century since they've had to do anything like this before. Because as you referenced, like everything that went on in that building, every decision that was made went through Bill Belichick. So this is a very, very different structure that you're going to have here. And from a personnel standpoint, I think that's important. And I think that's a good thing. When you look at the New England Patriots' last 10 drafts, Michael, 18 first and second round picks, one Pro Bowler, who was Mac Jones. How's that working out right now? Zero first-time All-Pros, zero players that signed to a second contract with the team. The last one, I think, was Dante Hightower. So it has been a minute, and they need some of those organizational changes.
Right, I think they do. But here's what I think people miss the boat. Like, what is going to be the organizational philosophy? Like, who are we now as the Patriots? Mm. See, nobody asked that question. Like, what are we now? Are we going to be a big, fast, physical football team that can play well in complementary football? I mean, that's the fundamental question. Somebody's got to repair the philosophy. Somebody's got to walk in there and say, here's who we are. This is the kind of football team I want. And so Kraft can say he's got no involvement, which he's written a book called Destiny, and, you know, they've got a 10-part documentary series coming out about how involved they are. So, I mean, you can say you're not, but you are, or else those books wouldn't have been written. And the reality of it is you got to have a philosophy, and that comes from the ownership.
Sure. As for Bill Belichick, this last minute here, the favorite is still Atlanta. We just said it. He's had his second interview with the Falcons, too. The more I keep thinking about it, the more I like it.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it's going to come down to today, tomorrow, whenever they go down there. You know, he's going to meet the executive committee, whomever, Terry Fontenot and Ryan Poles and maybe some of the people in the personnel. He's going to meet that. You know, this is a discovery period for him too, right? Because if he's going to go down there and work, he's got to know what blank, who he wants to keep, who he doesn't, and he has to feel comfortable with them.
Yeah, I wonder how much of those conversations are blank and the team interviewing him and him also interviewing the team, given his pedigree and all that he has done. So I to be a fly on the wall in some of those conversations.
Well, I think he's interviewing them, because everybody who is in the building is calling, having their sources call him, recommending them. So if you're Ryan Poles, you're having Sean Payton call, you know, that kind of thing.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN daily newsletter. You'll get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox, absolutely free, every single day. Today's newsletter honing in on the divisional round, a couple of games with big spreads coming up this weekend. VSiN.com/newsletter is how you can subscribe. And let's get into some of those games as we welcome in Mike Somich to the show, VSiN host of The Handle every weekend, 4 to 7 Pacific, 7 to 10 Eastern with Matt Brown, also, of course, professional handicapper. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. I know you had Green Bay last week plus the points. Who could have ever thought that they would put up that type of a performance, though, against the Dallas Cowboys? Was that one of your biggest surprises, or you obviously liked them, so did you like them that much?
I did like them quite a bit. I had them rated as the third best team in the NFC heading into the playoffs, just a little bit behind Detroit and obviously behind San Francisco. So wasn't shocked they were able to put up that performance, but the way they did it, I think, was the most surprising part. Being able to jump out 27-0 and really dominate that game from start to finish was not what I expected. We talked about Jordan Love last week. I mean, he has been phenomenal. The last nine games now, 7-2, 21 touchdowns. Just one interception. This Green Bay offense is absolutely humming. And the loss of A.J. Dillon actually been a positive for them. We've seen Aaron Jones go for four straight 100-yard games without A.J. Dillon in there. So I like the fact that you've got Aaron Jones just being the bell cow back. And then you've got this plethora of wide receivers and young tight ends that are all good pass catchers for Green Bay. So able to spread it out to all these different weapons, and going to be a fun game in San Francisco this week. I don't have a Green Bay ticket on the money line, but I do think the Packers could be live this weekend.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, she doesn't want to hear that. This is.
Slow your roll there, Mike. He just put her in a
deep, dark depression, and now we still have an hour and 15 minutes of the show. How about the over total in this game? Do you like that? I mean, I think when you go back and watch good offenses against San Francisco, I think San Francisco's defense is a little overrated, and I do think that the Green Bay Packers can pass protect really well, and they throw the ball effectively. They'll score, but do you like the over at 50.5?
I do like the over quite a bit in this one, Michael. And the reason is why you laid it out there. Look, San Francisco is going to get theirs. This is not a good Green Bay defense. They gave up back-to-back NFC players of the week earlier this season, followed up by giving up over 300 yards passing to Bryce Young. San Francisco should be able to come out and move the football effectively, especially with Jay Alexander missing the second straight practice today. But I think Green Bay is going to be able to score as well. And to me, if you like Green Bay plus the 9.5, you're in a lot of ways saying, hey, this game's going over, because you're accepting it's going to be a shootout and that Green Bay is going to be able to put points on the board. And since I'm someone who does lean toward the Green Bay side here at plus the 9.5, I think this game is going to absolutely fly over the 50.5 total. This Green Bay team's just been a dead over team since Jordan Love has really been able to figure it out. They're 7-1 in their last 8 games to the over. San Francisco's 4-6 in their last 4-6 over in their last 6 as well. So these are two teams that offensively should be able to be effective against the defense they're facing. And I don't see a world where you don't have points early in this game, which creates one or the other to be chasing. I love the fact that Green Bay took the ball against Dallas when they won the coin toss last week. I expect they're going to end up with the football either way. If they win the toss, they're going to take it and try and go after San Francisco early. Shanahan generally defers to the second half, so I'd expect he does the same thing here. If the Packers can get on the board early, this is just going to fly to the over. So really, really like that 50.5 total out in there.
I like that thought process and what you mentioned there with Green Bay and the way that they started and just ran the ball down the Cowboys' throats from the jump and were scoring at will. Like, that's my one fear, is that they will get a lead early and then San Francisco's in a position to chase, which is not their game. They don't have success there. They like getting a lead, kind of playing, leaning off that way, and just maintaining. It's a different thing when you're chasing. And so that's what I'm trying to avoid. So if you guys could just bring the vibes in a little bit more positive way, that would be great for me. But another over that I was actually looking at was this Bucks-Lions game. I think that's another situation where we could get a lot of points. You don't have the total, but you do have another play on this game. How are you angling it?
Yeah, I missed the 46.5 on the over. And because I missed that, I didn't put a play in on the over here at 48.5, 47, 48, very important numbers when you're playing totals. So the difference between 46.5, 48.5, pretty big there. That's why I don't have an over bet in this spot. The Bucks should be able to take advantage of the Lions defense in this spot. They should be able to throw the football, but that Lions defensive line looks significantly better taking on the Rams than I was expecting. And I do think that the Lions are going to be able to create some pressure here against the Bucks. And the Bucks just love running the football. I don't know why. They're not very effective when they do it, but they consistently will just run the football 18 to 20 times a game. On the other side, the Lions should be able to absolutely feast on this defense for the Bucks. Amon-Ra St. Brown should have another big spot here. I think they're going to be able to move the football through the ground and through the air. I was looking all over the place for a bet in this game, and what I came up with is if you play the Lions to win the first half, basically money line first half, money line game, you get minus 130. So it's double result over at DraftKings.com. Lions first half, Lions game, minus 130. I think this is where the fairy tale for the Buccaneers end. And I think people are a little overrating the Bucs off that Eagles win. That Eagles team was a disaster, an absolute mess. And so you can't look at that game and say, okay, this is what we're going to expect from the Bucs every time. You get another home game in Detroit, that atmosphere is going to be absolutely wild. And I think the offense is going to be clicking. I looked at the team total for Detroit over 27.5. That's minus 103 as well. I decided to go with the first half full game result as the best bet in here at minus 130, but I like that team total over as well. I think Detroit has their way on offense.
Yeah. Let's go to everybody's on the Bills. The line finally moved from 2.5 to 3. I know you don't have a play on the line, but you do have a play on the total. We, you know, there's conflicting reports because it's Buffalo. Could have lake effect snow, might not. But the one thing we do know, if the weather's clear, both teams proved last week they'll throw the football in cold weather. But, you know, you like this to be under the total because why?
Well, I played the under on Tuesday, so I write an article every Tuesday over on vsin.com. Gives out a couple early bets. We got that over at 49.5. We got this under total at 46.5. I'd still play it at 45. Again, talking about key numbers here, 46 and 45, not the most key numbers in totals. Once you get to 44, that's a very, very important number. This is just one of those games. When you look at these two teams, I'm not sure where the offense comes from. Neither is in the top 10 in explosive play rate, so we're not going to have these big dynamic plays. These two teams know each other extremely well. Kansas City's defense matches up very good against the Buffalo offense. You can send Snead all over the place with Diggs. They understand how to defend, and they've defended Allen multiple times. Just look to earlier this season. The game was 2017 in Kansas City, 37, way under this 45 total. I think Kansas City tries to keep this game slow and be able to win with their defense. There's also these two teams also not as dynamic inside the red zone, so you're going to see a lot of threes versus sevens in this spot. And then you have the weather as the final kicker here. We're not sure where we're going to get there. I think this should be an under in good weather. If we get bad weather, I absolutely love it. I'll look at some alt unders, take it all the way down to probably 38.5 or so on the alt unders. I just don't see where the offense comes from consistently with both these teams. And we've seen them both want to establish the run as well. If you're running the football consistently, that's going to keep that clock moving. And I think you're going to see a lot of Pacheco, a lot of Cook, a lot of Allen on the ground in this game. And if that's the case, I think this thing trends pretty drastically to the under.
These teams obviously know each other really well. They've played seven times the last handful of years. Mahomes has won the playoff matchups both times they've been at home. How much pressure do you think is on Josh Allen to win at home and move on and beat this team?
A ton. I mean, if you look at their exits the last couple of years, twice to Mahomes, and we can't forget about Joe Burrow and Cincinnati going up and absolutely stomping this Bills team in Orchard Park last year. So I think there's a lot of pressure here on the Bills, not nearly as much on the Chiefs. This is supposed to be Buffalo's year. If they want to get through the Chiefs, this is their opportunity. They get to play at home. Everything broke perfectly for them later in the season. I think it's going to be another disappointment. I'm waiting to play the Chiefs here. I'm going to end up with them. If I get a flat 3-110, I will be on the Chiefs at 3-110. I'll be sprinkling the money line. I think the Chiefs are a better team. And if it weren't for a couple key drops during the season, they would be a higher seed than this Bills team. I don't trust Allen in these type of games. And we saw him throw multiple picks against Miami in the red zone, fumble it there as well. I trust Mahomes more in these spots. And so until Allen's able to do it in the playoffs, I'm going to side with the Chiefs. So I like the Chiefs plus the 3 if it gets to -110. I think we're going to keep seeing Buffalo money. So I'm just waiting it out at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the Chiefs have kind of figured it out a little bit better offensively. Kelsey's what? He's 8 weeks without a touchdown pass. I mean, that's still an issue. Rashee Rice is playing better. But I'm with you, Mike. I think, you know, everybody, well, Mahomes never played on the road. Seriously. He's Patrick Mahomes. I don't think it's going to bother him. Communication might bother him, but playing on the road, no, I don't think so.
And go ahead.
This is the best defense and the best rushing game they've had since he got there as well. If you want something for the road, it's an offensive line. That's tough to travel. You want that defense. You want a running game. Kansas City checks all those boxes.
I was just going to say 30 seconds. I know you have a prop that you wanted to give out too, so if we can squeeze it in.
Yeah, you got it. Give me Lamar Jackson, over 52.5 rushing yards in this spot. He ran for 51 yards. He ran for over 6 yards a carry the first week that they played each other. He's going to be relied on in the running game, especially with the running back injuries that Baltimore has been dealing with all season. I think he flies over that 52.5 number. This isn't a great defense against quarterback runs in Houston.
You're the man, the Samba Bomb himself. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you,
Mike.
You got it.
Good luck this weekend.
Yeah, great Thursday spot. Good luck to you as well, my friend. Mike Somich again. Make sure you check him out Saturday and Sunday. The Handle here on VSiN and DraftKings Network, 4 to 7 Pacific, 7 to 10 Eastern. When we come back, we're going to continue this divisional round conversation because 3 of the 4 games that we have upcoming were regular season matchups. So different game or more the same from what we saw earlier this season. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL postseason, is bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs that much more electric. New customers can bet $5 on any game. They get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VEGAS only on DraftKings Sportsbook. Again, that code VEGAS, V-E-G-A-S. The crown is yours. And this is the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni, and Mike Palm here live with you. Thanks for hanging out with us on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And before we get to the beautiful Palms Pressing 3, cannot wait to hear your questions. Michael, I know you had a follow-up on Niners-Packers, so let's get to it.
Well, I wanted to know, like, what is the appeal to this? Like, everybody on Monday morning was hammering this Packer game. And you just said this is a big one in your shop, too. Why is that, Mike?
For us, we have a lot of San Francisco folks here, right? They're a very powerful brand. The Bay Area, the rise of the Warriors in recent years, right? And that franchise. And then Green Bay is one of the national franchises. Green Bay, Dallas, Pittsburgh are what I consider. And Kansas City has started to become national franchises. So this is a highly attention game. And the Packers played so well. And it's a compelling story. And I have to tell you something. I said I haven't had a bet on this game. But I've heard pundits say how the NFC bracket has opened up for San Francisco. I don't think so. At all. There's no way Dallas was going there and beating them in a championship game. I think this makes it more difficult for them. Although I think they get to the Super Bowl, and I think they're clearly the best team. I think Green Bay poses more of a threat than Dallas would have in a championship game.
I agree. I mean, look, this Green Bay offense is sensational. Yeah. Now, we, you know, the defense is going to give up points, but I could promise you, if you gave Kyle Shanahan true serum, this is, look, he knew Cincinnati came in there with their receivers and threw the ball effectively on them. He's watched Lamar go in there and throw the ball effectively on them. You know, it isn't like they're a shutdown defense. Like, I know they're good on defense and they tackle really well. But I'm just telling you now, the Packers can move the football.
And they're peaking. Like, they're playing great football
playing
the back
perfect.
End of the season.
They're playing, like, perfect games.
Yes.
Like, they beat the Bears by 8. They beat them, like, by 24, right? Mm. I mean, it's and you bring up a great point, Michael. I thought the Cincinnati game was the more dominant game against San Francisco than Baltimore. Baltimore was a lot of self-inflicted stuff. Cincinnati just systematically drove the ball down the field. They had no answers on second down. They had no answers on third down.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. That's why I was so surprised. I mean, I think everybody thinks – now, look, I think if San Francisco plays from in front, but here's what we do know. If San Francisco is behind in the fourth quarter, they're not going to win it.
I'm glad you didn't say the stat, Michael, because you know how much it physically pains me.
I know, so I didn't say it.
Was very sweet of you. I appreciate that you're just that kind of colleague. Let's get to Pumps. Pressing three, though, I know you got a couple big picture questions for Michael.
No, there's some specific as well, but – of the four divisional round favored teams, which quarterback, and we'll go through it, so Brock Purdy, Jared Goff, Lamar Jackson, or Josh Allen, is under the most pressure and, might be the same answer, which one is most likely to throw in a clunker this weekend?
Give me the four you want me to talk about. I mean,
the four teams that are
Lamar.
Favored. So Purdy.
Okay, the four favorites. I got it.
Jackson and Allen.
Well, I think, look, we know Allen turns the ball over, right? We do know that. It's rare that he plays mistake-free, but he overcomes it. You know, I think Purdy's under the most pressure because for some reason, poor Purdy, you know, he can get no credit. You know, Kurt Warner is an Iowa barnstormer and people just love it. This kid's Mr. Irrelevant and people can't see it. I think a lot of this ties back to the Trey Lance thing, and nobody can believe that Trey Lance isn't a great player. So I think Purdy's under the most pressure to play well, but I think their defense in San Francisco has got to live up to their quote-unquote reputation. And, you know, look, Lamar Jackson, I think he'll play well. C.J. Stroud's his first game. To me, whatever he does in that game, it's going to be a learning experience.
I agree with Michael because people are going to say Lamar's under the most pressure. But Purdy also personally and financially, this is a huge game for him.
Yeah.
I feel right.
No question. And look, nobody's going to blame – like, you know, everybody blamed McCarthy for the Cowboy loss. Nobody blamed Dan Quinn. They were horrible on defense. And if they turn it over in San Francisco and they don't go point for point with the Packers – you know, then it's going to be all on Purdy. And if the Packers don't score and San Francisco plays well, all we're going to hear the next week is how great the 49er defense is. Like, Purdy has no real benefit in the game. Like, nobody's going to walk away from there saying Purdy's really good.
So
but I can tell you, the Packer coaches know Purdy's good.
I was just going to say, that's the reason I disagree on the pressure question of it being with Brock Purdy, because he is Mr. Irrelevant and everybody wants to say that it's a system that anybody can play in anyways. So I think, like, if people do their job, that's enough. I would put it between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, because Allen needs to beat Kansas City in the playoffs, needs to get that off his back. This is supposed to be their year, and it hasn't been throughout the majority of the season, but they've turned things on. So I think there's pressure on him, and I think there's pressure on Lamar Jackson, who's going to be a two-time MVP and is 1-3 in the playoffs.
I think think the Mr. Irrelevant narrative has always been false. The guy started 47 games in Ames.
Hey, yeah. I agree. I'm on Brock Purdy's side. Yeah. Like, I'm a fan. Yeah. So,
but it's a great answer by Michael.
He gets killed for it. But Kurt Warner doesn't. Like, there's just no, you know, Trent Green didn't get killed for it. He got cut by a Canadian League team.
Kurt Warner was stocking shelves at the Hy-Vee in Cedar Falls. I've been there. I mean, it's something. All right, we got to keep going here because we're up against the clock. Everything I've ever read coming out of Alabama or out of the Eagles themselves or former Eagles like Jaworski say that all the intangibles about Jalen Hurts were incredible. Right? Could he be a passer was always the question. But as a leader, he was never questioned. So I want you, Michael, to talk about and think about the slow descent into madness that was the Eagles' back half of the season. And how did Jalen Hurts go from being this great leader to being, quote, and we can't say the word, a female dog? What happened there?
You know, I think a lot of it is, first of all, it's the disease of me, right? We have this team that achieves so much. And they're never told there's anything wrong with them back here. Only when the world comes apart does Wawa fall apart, right? You know, everything's great. And so I think what's happened here is they haven't worked to the level. And I think he knows this. He said it earlier in the year. We're not working as hard as we need to. And I don't think he's getting coached to the level he got coached last year. And so, you know, and now he's the highest paid player on the team. Now he's one of the highest paid players in the league. That's a hard thing to deal with, right? And, you know, you run through this challenge of if I demand more from the players, they're going to say it's because I'm making all the money. And there wasn't that eye of the tiger in this Eagle team. You know, there wasn't that they could all say they were. But look at the conditioning. I mean, their head coach really is probably as guilty as anybody of drinking his own Kool-Aid. Like he got his head over his skis really bad, you know, walking off the field in Kansas City, how, you know, like acting like a teenager. Like, you want your leader to, I mean, you got to put things in perspective. And I think all those things combination, then they can get it back. But I think they got to be more demanding. Look, the one thing I know about football and about any winning a championship is the tenets of what happens. I was having this conversation with the head coach the other day, who's no longer a head coach. And I said, look, the formula for winning titles is still the same formula when you coached. And he said, you know, we sound like two grumpy old men sitting on a bench. And he was right, but nothing. Accountability, right? Being tactical, being strategic, all those things matter. And if you're taking time off from that, it's not going to work.
I'm going to pigeonhole you here into a 35-second answer, but I'm sorry, but I'm going to do it. Okay, our friend Gil Alexander did a great segment back in August about how every year since 2000, an NFL team with a regular season win total here in the Vegas market has made the playoffs. 19 out of the 23 years, two or more teams have made it. This year, four teams made it to the playoffs that had a regular season win total under 500, so under 8.5. The Rams, the Packers, the Texans and
the Bucks.
All four of those teams covered, and three of them won outright in the divisional. They're playing with house money, right? Above expectations. Three of them are still left this weekend. Of those three, which is most likely to pull the upset?
Green Bay. Because Green Bay can score. Green Bay can throw the ball. What gives San Francisco trouble? Throwing the ball. If you can pass protect, what gives Green Bay trouble? Throwing the ball. Seattle last year. See, that's a close game in the second half, remember?
Well, Seattle they led at the halftime. Seattle led at
Geno
halftime.
Smith,
and they got away from running Walker.
That turnover killed them in the set. And now the game became 14 points as opposed to 7. Green Bay's good. Yeah. And don't let anybody kid you. Now, if they turn it over, which they haven't done recently, I'm saying this and I'm trusting Joe Barry. I should probably have my head examined, but I think it goes back and forth.
I give you a good bet. You want a good bet?
Love it.
Take San Francisco minus 2.5 in the third quarter. If LaFleur wins the toss, he's taking the ball first. If Shanahan wins the toss, he's deferring. Frisco will get the ball after halftime.
That's right.
Yep.
This game gives me a lot of anxiety. That's a wrap for us today. Thanks for hanging out with us on the Lombardi
Line.
Great job, Mike. Great job, as always. We'll see you again next Thursday.